Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, welcome to another episode of How I Raise It, produced by Foundersuite.com. Today I have Ethan Agarwal of The Coterie coming to us from Palo Alto. How's your day going?
So far, so good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. We finally have some blue skies here in Marin after a lot of rain, so it's nice. So let's jump into this from the top. What's The Coterie?
Yeah, so Coterie is a new fintech company that me and two other co-founders started a couple of years ago. But I'll tell you why we started it. So previously, I was the founder of a company called Aptiv, which is a digital fitness company that we grew to about $100 million of revenue. And along the way, you know, company was doing well, and I turned off my salary, and I went to apply for a mortgage. And the guy says, "We can't give you a mortgage. You don't have a salary." And I remember thinking, you know, that's kind of crazy, because if you look at my cash or my equity or my assets, like, clearly I'm not at a risk of defaulting. But he couldn't conceptualize that someone without a salary could afford a mortgage. And, you know, almost everyone that I know makes a lot more money from their equity or their carry or other assets that they have than from their salary. So the fact that these institutions haven't picked up on, you know, this shift in the way that people make money and the way to assess risk was like pretty surprising. And so then my wife and I went to meet with a wealth manager, and, you know, the guy did his whole song and dance. And at the end of it, he created a portfolio that was basically like a 60-40 strategy for us. And the variations were like, oh, we could do 70-30 or we can do 50-50. And that was about as creative as he got. And, you know, I was 32, 33 at this time. And I remember thinking, like, this isn't at all how I want to allocate my capital at this stage in my life. But also just the way that he was talking and the way that he communicated the plan. I mean, literally, he presented it to me in a binder, right? So like, there was just clearly a disconnect in the way that he thought about me and my future and what I thought about myself and my future and the potential and how I wanted to be involved in investing and learning about, you know, companies and products. And at the time, like, crypto and a whole bunch of stuff. And so when I sold Aptiv, I looked around and realized that no one had solved this problem. And so we started The Coterie to build financial products. We build products for people who make more money from assets than salary. And so it ends up being a lot of startup people, a lot of finance people, but eventually, you know, there's a whole suite of, you know, even like partners at law firms or consulting firms or other places where you're compensated for risk, which is ownership, which is equity, as opposed to compensated for salary. And so we realized there's an opportunity to build products for those people. And that's where The Coterie came around.
Interesting. Financial products for folks whose wealth comes from ownership and stuff like that. But I guess one immediate question is, isn't there a risk to that? Like, I know what my paper worth is because I own 66% of my startup and I know what our last valuation was, but that's, isn't there a bit of a paper worth there? Like, is it true wealth? If you're making financial decisions about extending mortgages and things like that, based on kind of this paper wealth, is there a risk there or what?
Yeah. So what you do is you discount the value by some volatility and some liquidity discount. But I would actually argue that assets like cash or a lot of public equities are more stable than a salary, because you can get fired tomorrow, but your cash that's cash is not going anywhere. And if you get fired tomorrow, your Apple stock doesn't go down by 50%. So being valued more comprehensively is actually lowering your risk than for the lender than it is by looking at just someone's salary and credit score.
Yeah, sure. Okay, cool. So let's talk about what the product actually does. Maybe take us on a typical customer journey.
Yeah, so we have several products in market. I'll talk about our investing products. So we provide access to invest in companies and private companies and LP into funds that you ordinarily would not have access to. So as an example, we have LP'd, The Coterie has LP'd into Andreessen Horowitz's late stage venture fund 3. And then we syndicate that and make it available to our members. So if you wanted to invest $50,000 into Andreessen, there's no other place in the world that you could do that except for the Coterie. And you would ordinarily have to, one, meet their minimums, which are, you know, 10 million plus, and B, or two, these funds are always oversubscribed. So even if you had the money, it doesn't guarantee you access. So what we provide is, one, access, and two, the lower minimum to help access those funds. So we have now, I think, 12 different funds, some of the best in the world, a bunch of Andreessen Horowitz funds, Initialized Capital, Code2, Tribe, a series of other ones. Same with companies. We provide access to funds, companies like Stripe or Anduril or others. And so if you wanted to invest $50,000 into Anduril, you know, it's not an easy thing to do, but we have access to that. So that's our investing product. We have an estate planning product, which is really critical. So most founders don't realize, or I should say most people don't realize, that estate planning is not something that you do when you're old and rich. It's something that you do early to really reap the benefits of it. You want to do it before any assets that you have increase in value. So we've built what's called an ATOM trust, asset tax optimization. And what it does is it helps you protect your taxes in the event that your company ends up being really successful. So this is something that, like, Mark Zuckerberg, Dustin Moskowitz, the Roblox CEO, like, I did this my second time around. People who know this do it, and they can save a lot of money in taxes. But most founders think that it's not for them until they're successful later on. And that's a huge mistake. You can potentially save like $10 or $11 million of taxes in a $100 million outcome. And so we built a product that makes it dead simple for founders to start their estate planning.
Interesting.
We also, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yep.
We have another product around helping people who are LPs in funds. So one thing that we noticed is that historically people, the LPs into funds were either very large institutions or very wealthy individuals who had family offices, but that has come down market. So like even I'm an LP in five different funds, and I, you know, I'm not exceedingly wealthy. I don't have a family office. So I deal with dozens of capital calls, capital account statements, K-1s, et cetera, on a regular basis. And it's a huge pain in the ass because every fund uses a different portal. I have to log in. I have to download the PDF. You know, my wife asked me, where's the mark on this fund that we're in? And I don't have the answer to that. So we built a product that actually consolidates all of the fund reporting into one place and also consolidates all of your capital calls into one place. So you can actually wire out capital calls, and you can actually meet your or learn about what exposure you have to all the underlying companies through the Coterie. And we're seeing significant demand for that product.
Interesting. Okay. So those are the three today. And then I guess, where are you going from here?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, look, I think there's some natural solutions, things like mortgages that are based on assets instead of income. We would eventually move into something like insurance. We are also discussing products around exchange funds. There's a lot of innovation that's left to occur in consumer fintech, specifically for people who have, you know, the type of financial profile that everyone that we know does.
Yeah, interesting. I want to poke around on one of those products, the first one you mentioned, like access to, you know, Andreessen Horowitz's latest fund. I assume the minimum is 50K, but you probably put a maximum on there too. Otherwise, you know, I want to take as much of that as I can. So
exactly.
I guess two-part question. How did you guys get access to that fund? Why did Andreessen let you into that? And then, you know, how does it work from the actual customer? Do you allocate a percentage to each customer?
So I'll answer your second question first. So we have minimums and maximums for each fund. And as long as you're within that range, you can put in however much you want. And there's a finite amount of total commitment that we have. So like, for example, it's for one of the funds, it's like $4 million. And I think the cap is $250,000 and the minimum is $50,000. So somewhere, you know, but once the fund is subscribed, it's fully subscribed. So like a lot of the Andreessen funds have been fully taken. And so now there's just no more allocation left. In terms of how we got access, well, Andreessen Horowitz led our Series A, so we built a relationship with them. But the other funds, we just, you know, we've built relationships over time. We know the teams that run a lot of these funds. When we started, you know, there was a little bit more effort involved in convincing the funds to let us become LPs because they had never heard of us. But now that we've been at it for a couple of years and we've shown that we have a really strong LP base and we always meet our capital calls on time, you know, it's becoming incrementally easier for us to get the next fund or the next private company.
Yeah, that's cool. Excellent. Let's talk about raising money for this. So how much have you guys raised and over how many rounds?
Yeah, we've raised $50 million in total, $40 million of equity capital and $10 million of debt. We've done our Series A, so we're two rounds in, call it. So our first round was done by Pear VC, which also did the first round of my first company. And then Initialized Capital came in to lead our seed, which is Gary Tan's fund. Alda there was great, and then, or has been great. And then Andreessen did our Series A, and the Series A was a $33 million round, which closed in Q4 of 21. But we announced it in October, just about 5 months ago.
And we want to get into the details of that, but why the $10 million debt as well?
You know, it's just, it's one of those things where it's nice to have additional security as needed. It's more of a facility that we can draw down as opposed to, you know, required that we take it. And so it's just nice to have it as a backstop.
Got it. Okay, let's talk about putting these rounds together. Those are nice, healthy-sized Series A. You're a second-time founder, though, so there's got to be some advantage to that. But how did you put together the list of investors, get in front of them? Are they all relationships, like you mentioned, with Pear that had done previous deals or what?
Yeah. So when I was starting the company, I did go to my previous investors from Aptiv. Pear was the first check into Aptiv. I pitched probably 100 plus funds to get my seed round done at Aptiv when I was first starting that company. And Pear was the first one to come in. And they were, there's a partner there, Ajay Kamat, who is tremendously helpful to me in building Aptiv. So then when I started this new company, he was the first guy that I went to. And they were, you know, supportive and came in with a check to the first check-in for the company. And Ajay has continued to be very helpful, both as an investor, but also just as a partner and operator. They introduced me to a variety of funds. One of the funds was Initialized, which, you know, has done some incredible work. They were the seed investors in Coinbase and Instacart and Flexport and Opendoor and others. And Gary and Alda are incredible investors. And then we started, you know, building up the team and seeing some traction. And so we met the Andreessen Horowitz folks over the summer. And then we had shown quite a bit of traction. So in Q4, you know, the conversation started to progress. And thankfully, they actually preempted our Series A. So we didn't have to pitch anyone else. And, you know, they've been, you know, a lot of firms promise a lot, but these guys have been really, really incredible partners. Not just like, you know, when you're pitching, there's a lot of this idea of like reverse pitching where the company does the pitch and then the fund will say, here are all the things we can help you with. And a lot of the times it's kind of BS, but these guys have actually been immensely, immensely helpful.
One of the things Andreessen was, you know, known for is having this large roster of, I don't know what you call them exactly, service providers or you know, people on staff, non-investment decision makers that help with all stuff. Do they still have that? And have you tapped into that resource?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, immensely. You know, the way that I've seen it structured at other funds is that they have sort of the investing team and then the operating team.
Yeah.
But what I think Andreessen has done well is that they have carved out niches of like, this is the team that helps think through lending debt financing. This is the team that thinks through PR. This is the team that thinks through this. And sometimes there'll be investors on that team and sometimes there'll be non-investors on that team. And so we've used probably, I don't know, 80% of the different groups that they have there for everything from hiring, diligence, fundraising, debt facilities, you know, so much stuff. And then the other thing is, if they don't have someone on staff, they're basically one phone call or one connection away from getting you in front of the right person. I've had, you know, dinners with CEOs of Morgan Stanley and BlackRock and Vanguard and, you know, on and on and on, all through introductions from Andreessen.
That's very cool. That's great. So Aptiv, you pitched 100 investors for this startup. How many did you pitch total? I mean, I'm assuming it's a small number, but yeah, how did that?
Yeah, this one I was fortunate to be able to get mostly inbound. So I didn't really pitch a lot. I mean, I pitched the funds that I raised from, but this, like, you know, Pear came in right away. Initialized came in right away, and Andreessen came in right away, and Gradient, which is Google's venture firm, they also came in right away, and then Rocket Internet, which is Oliver Sandor's firm, also came in right away, and they were an investor in Aptiv as well. So I think there's maybe two or three funds that I pitched early on that said they didn't want to move forward, which is fine. But this time I was able to be a little bit more selective with the investors that I worked with.
Yeah, interesting. So let's, I wanted to contrast and compare first time versus second time. And maybe let's touch on that. You know, what were you, as the second time founder raising capital, what were you kind of optimizing for that was maybe different than the first time?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there's some natural benefit to being a second time founder, but I think the difference was a couple of things. One is I was looking for people who were more non-financial contributors. So like a lot of people have money and, you know, you're sort of fortunate as a second time founder that you can generally raise capital. But I was looking for people that were going to provide a lot more than just capital. And because I'm building a fintech company, there's a world of, you know, regulatory and capital and compliance and a whole suite of things that we have to think about that have nothing to do with fitness, for example, like my first company. And so I needed someone that had sophistication, relationships, who had the experience in supporting, you know, from scratch financial institutions, because building a financial institution from the ground up is a significant undertaking. And I knew what we were getting into. So I needed someone that had the infrastructure and had the experience of building a fintech company. Number two is I needed someone who was going to be there for me, because while things so far have all been good, inevitably at some point things are going to get choppy. And I don't want to be one of their, you know, companies where they, if you start struggling, they sort of stop supporting you. And I've seen that happen with other funds. And so I wanted to make it clear that I'm looking for a long-term partner. One thing I'll tell other founders who are listening, by the way, is when you're raising a round, the tendency is to negotiate as hard as you can for the founders to maintain as much of their ownership and for the investors to get as little of their ownership as possible. So a typical Series A will be like, say, 20%. And, you know, the founders will say, well, what about you guys get 15? And or the fund will say, well, we need 25. And my advice would be, don't try to negotiate the fund down too much in their ownership percentage, because these guys need ownership to give a shit and to actually try to help you. So if you are, even if you are successful in negotiating them down, you may actually be shooting yourself in the foot, because a fund that owns 15% of a given company is going to be a lot less helpful than a fund that owns 25% of a company. And so it's actually in your interest to dilute yourself a little bit more in order to get more support from the fund.
I like that phrase, and we can swear on this show. They need ownership to give a shit. there's the tagline right there, or the headline. Going back to something you mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, kind of optimizing for people who are going to be there in the rough times, et cetera, the long term. How do you figure that out, other than maybe talking to portfolio founders that have failed or something like that? Yeah. How do you figure that out?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you can tell, like, firms have reputations and their reputations are generally built for a reason. So yeah, I do a lot of diligence. I talk to other founders, and now my network of founders is pretty good. So I can talk to people who have raised money from basically any fund that's out there. And also you can tell, like, you know, some funds are clearly write a check and disappear. Some funds are we're going to get in the weeds and get dirty with you. Some funds are, you know, we're clearly going to be there for you no matter what. Like, I think there's a story where TCV propped up Netflix like six different times before they went public when they were clearly struggling. And so TCV has earned the credibility of being there for you. And I think that is a hard reputation to build, because now it's easy to say, oh, of course they stood up for Netflix six times, but that's not an obvious decision at the time, certainly not six times. And I think that credibility is worth a lot for founders like me.
That's interesting. Sure. What else are you doing differently? More broadly focused question than just fundraising, but what else are you doing differently on second round than first round, first time? Yeah.
I mean, look, I think there's a couple things. Founders need to take care of themselves more than we think. There's three things, I think. One is physical health, mental health, and financial health. And so, you know, physically, that's things like working out and sleeping and, you know, spending some time doing things for yourself that are not just working on your company. Mental health,
Let me pause you right there. I mean, but does that really mean that you're not working 16-hour days or 14-hour days? Are you actually like...
No, I think it's sort of inevitable that I'm going to be working 14-hour days, but it's not because I have to, it's because I like it. But I do wake up earlier so that I can go for a run every morning. And I do my very best not to schedule meetings that early so that I can protect that time. You know, examples like that, whereas previously I would say, oh, I'll skip my run because I have to go to XYZ meeting. I'll just try to push that meeting so that it gets done and gets done later and I can still, you know, enjoy my run or whatever it is. So I think protecting your time to do something physical is really helpful.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Protecting your time, blocking off time for physical activity. How about on the mental health side?
Yeah. So look, I think startups are very volatile. And I made the mistake the first time around where every success was, I was elated, and every, you know, shitty part, I was depressed. And there's too many of those in a given day of a startup to do it healthily for, you know, 5 or 7 or 10 or 15 years. And so like, I remember I collapsed at work and I had ulcers and it was just like, it was a total mess because I was pushing myself so hard and not taking care of myself that I ultimately was just being unproductive, even though I thought I was going to be more productive. And so taking care of yourself mentally, for example, this time I have an executive coach, which I didn't have the first time around. I thought it would be a weakness, but it's actually a significant sign of strength, both sign and source of strength. And then the third is financial health. So, I mean, this is partially why we're building the Coterie, is it's really important for founders to take care of themselves, take care of their home, so to speak, so that they are not worried about their ability to run a company that may not have a liquidity event for 5 or 7 or 10 years. And part of that is tax planning. Part of that is diversification away from just owning all of, you know, all of your net worth being tied up in the single asset that you're building. And so once you take care of those three things, your physical, mental, and financial health, then I think founders can be really, really, really productive. And that's what we have focused on at the Coterie.
That's good. That's good. Anything else on the mental health? This is actually an interesting topic that we really haven't covered on this show. Like, the executive coach is good, recognizing the volatility that is just inherent. Anything else like that you're doing or that you've seen other founders maybe do to help overcome this? I just don't feel like we...
Yeah, I mean, I think another part of it is like being transparent with your team is really important. So my first time around, I was a solo founder. And when things happened that were negative, I really held it internally because I was so scared of sharing, you know, these things with the team, and maybe they'll leave and maybe they'll, you know, it'll be a problem and then it'll compound. And so I really internalized all of that. This time around, I have two co-founders who are incredible. So I share with them, obviously, but even beyond them, we're very transparent. We have a small team that has worked together previously, that's been together for a long time. And it's nice to be able to, you know, share, like, I forget exactly the terminology, but it's something like victory is sweeter and defeat is softened because you did it together. So it's something more eloquent than that, but that's the sort of sentiment that we have at work. And so it allows me to not have to internalize every failure, and I get to share everything, the joys and the failures, with the team. And so it's about building that culture, right? And then when there is a mistake, we talk about it. And when there's a success, we talk about it. And so I think in order to keep your mind sharp for 7 or 10 or 15 years, you really need to build that relationship with your team, including some difficult conversations where something you were working on for 6 months ends up not working out, or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, cool. Excellent. All right. I won't keep you too much longer. Any kind of a generic question, but I ask everyone, any advice you would give your younger self if you were doing this all over again, or any just general advice you'd like to give to first-time startup founders?
Yeah, I think the number one advice I give people is just like, think about this as a long-term investment. It's very easy to get enamored with like rocket ship growth and rocket ship building. And you make decisions that are for the next 3 or 6 or 9 months, but and I mean both for your personal self and for the company, but realize that this is actually a very long journey, and you're doing this because you want to. People come to me and they say like, I want to start a company, but I don't know what to build. That person should not be starting a company. You start a company because you have seen a problem and you cannot believe that a solution does not exist for that problem. And you can't think or go to sleep because that problem and that solution are just glaring in your face. And then you have said, I have to go solve that problem. And so that's why you build a company. And if you're going to go do that, it's going to take you at least several years to solve it. And so make sure that you realize that this is a long-term journey. And, you know, if you're a success or you're a failure, chances are you're going to do it again and again and again. And so understanding the longevity of this is going to be really beneficial.
And I would add to that a little bit, because I think that's important. Understand the thinking of it long-term, understand longevity, and kind of to your point, finding something you're really passionate about. Because I think of our own journey at Founders Rate, like we ran out of money a couple times in the first 2 years, you know, like
everybody does.
All that stuff. Like it was, if I wasn't so passionate about what we're doing, we would have never made it this far. Now we've had 27,000 startups and doing well. But like, you know, it was purely founder passion that kept it alive during dark times when it was basically dead.
Yeah, no, so, exactly. Yeah. And I think that sentiment is something that every founder should understand before they're starting a company.
Excellent. All right. Well, I won't keep you anymore unless you have any other thoughts or advice. But if people want to learn more, it's thecoterie.com. And can they sign up today?
.co. So,
I'm sorry, .co.
Coterie, C-O-T-E-R-I-E.co. Or they can find me on Twitter at Ethan Agarwal.
Excellent. Is it general availability or is it a waitlist?
No, it's invite only, but you can add yourself to the waitlist and we'll slowly let people off of it.
Excellent. Cool. How long is the waitlist? Maybe you don't have to share that if you don't want to, but how long does it take to get in?
It's pretty long, yeah. but it's more so that we vet folks before we bring them on. So if you are of the right sort of threshold, then you know, we'll let people on pretty quickly.
Is it basically all startup founders at this point?
Startup founders, a lot of finance people. You have to be at least an accredited investor. And then a lot of our members are actually qualified purchasers.
Yeah, very cool. All right, Ethan, this is really interesting. Sounds like a much needed service, especially for founders. Thanks so much. We'll catch you after your next round. See you.
Great. Thanks for having me, and congrats on all your success as well.
Thank you. Over and out.
Bye.